Give a really loud Social Media Strategy Summit welcome to Alan Schonberg.
Thanks, Ryan. I see we have obstructed viewing, so I'll try and float around a bit. So a few things. So I work at NASDAQ in corporate communications. I have all of the media relations team works for me. I have the internal comms, and I work with our sustainability team as well. And then our social media team is part of marketing, but we are closely interlinked and work together. So we collaborate on quite a bit of projects, including Facebook Live. So 100 times a month is quite daunting. So I'm going to walk through today how we're doing it, what we're doing, talk about metrics, take a look at some of the content that drives our own content, how we share it, and then we'll open it up for questions. So a few things. One of the things that I will point out is Web Anna. So Web Anna actually runs all of our social media. She could not be here today because she's running our social media. So she's actually in Chicago. If you want to give a shout out to her on Twitter, she's quite active and responsive. But she is a great contact. I'm happy to answer your questions live today as we go through it. But as you move forward and have other questions, Anna Gonzalez really is the contact who's running all of this for us. In terms of what we are doing with Facebook Live, there are, I would say, these three key elements. One is panel discussions work extremely well for us from a content standpoint. We obviously can tap into listed companies on NASDAQ. We can tap into partners. But we look outside of that realm of just NASDAQ itself. We do a lot of discussions and Q&A with panel authors. We do discussions with politicians. We do discussions with social media influencers. So we definitely look at the universe from a content perspective, from a panel perspective, very broad, not just NASDAQ itself. Anna, as I mentioned, is in Chicago today. She is doing remote broadcasts. So if you go to our Facebook page, you'll more than likely see Anna and some of the things that we are doing from a business conference out of Chicago. So remote broadcasts also come in into play for us. Another person on our team, Josh, is in California at the Wall Street Journal Digital Live this week. He's doing a number of live Facebook sessions. So it's not just all done within the confines of NASDAQ. And we'll talk a little bit about studios as well. But the remote aspect of Facebook Live is really critical for us as we look at where we can go, conferences, business partners, and clients. And then, obviously, real-time insights. Facebook Live gives you a tremendous amount of insights. We'll talk about measurement, what we measure, what is success for us. But obviously, that is going to be very different for everybody. And I think for this audience, that's a pretty obvious point. But the engagements, the total views for us really has been tremendous. A lot of that, obviously, is driven by the consistency of what we're doing, the number of pieces we're doing, but also the quality of the content that we post onto Facebook Live. All right, so why video? A few things that, you know, I know people talk about monetizing it, but that's not really a driver for us. So I don't think as brands in particular, you know, we are out there trying to look at how much money we can make to support our budget and all of our marketing efforts. It is a possibility, but for us at NASDAQ, that's really not the point of why we are doing it. Engagement for us is by far number one, the activity that we're looking at. NASDAQ is not just a stock exchange. We do so many other things. We have a corporate solutions business that has 18,000 clients globally that buys IR and PR solutions from us, from a news release distribution network to IR Insights. We have a whole technology arm that supports 100 other marketplaces around the world. So we are not just an exchange. So for us, engagement, educating people about what we do, and the thought leadership externally, bringing in, as I mentioned, book authors. So you'll see that we'll bring in authors around finance, which makes sense, but we'll also bring around authors around technology or geopolitical events. So the idea, obviously, is, you know, rising up the NASDAQ narrative and our brand to talk about, you know, all the things they were doing from a financial technology perspective. It's not just about the stock market and stock trading. And, you know, we obviously do a lot of cross-pollination on helping our other accounts grow. So Instagram to Facebook, Twitter to Facebook Live pointing people to Twitter and so on and so forth. And you know, we learn as we go along. We're still learning, obviously, as we're posting content. And then Facebook Live, from a distribution standpoint, obviously, it, for those of you that have done it, whether you've done it personally and gone live yourself, or you're doing it for your brand, it is a fairly easy process to do and to edit and to track. So there is the ease of use and the convenience of it as well as the distribution and the network effect. When we look at all of the things that we have at our disposal and what we can do, we obviously go back to the foundation of marketing and what it is that we're trying to do. Number one is, you know your audience, right? So the things we do on Twitter are very different than Instagram stories, very different than Facebook Live. And this all comes through a process of learning, and all of these networks obviously also are changing themselves and evolving, so we have to change and evolve with them. And then in terms of our end goal, it's, what are we trying to accomplish? And for us, Facebook Live really has been and become more of an interview-type platform. You'll see most of our content on Facebook Live is going to be panel discussions or a one-on-one discussion. That's the format that works well for us. It works well for engagement for us. People, you know, do put in questions and comments about the speaker and what's happening around the discussion. So for us, for Facebook Live, it has become almost a talk show format for us, as opposed to just a talking head. And again, that has evolved as we've learned over time. And you know, as well as, you know, what I would say the consistency point. I've made that point before. You know, for us, Facebook Live has become something that started as a few videos, and it really is an entire platform in and of itself. We have shows all day long on Facebook Live. Not just out of New York, but again, Chicago, at conferences. So it has become a programming network for us, and that is how we view the platform at NASDAQ. So the consistency point as well has been extremely important for us. As we get people engaged, they know that they can go to the website, Facebook, and see all of the content, and they know they're going to see something that's new, something to engage with, and it's on an everyday basis. For us as well, I think the what's worked extremely successful from an engagement standpoint is when we look at bringing in other organizations for content, and Cisco is a great example of something that we did. We have a lot of great examples, but I love the Cisco one because, I'm a Star Wars fan, and I love what they were doing. But they have this whole engagement program around employees, and a focus on employees and making employees a part of the organization. Cisco came to us. We collaborated around the May the 4th earlier this year in terms of content. We actually engaged our own employees in the Cisco event internally as well, so we could get our own employees engaged with what Cisco was doing, and we cross-collaborated internally as well as externally. And we had this whole day of, you know, we are Cisco, may the 4th be with you. There were people in costumes. We had employees dress up. It was a really fun day for us, but it was also a fun way to bring in interesting and unique content around a topic that was obviously very popular that day. And it allowed us to work with a client and a key client as well. So again, it's not just about NASDAQ and what we're doing. You know, obviously we also have the market site in Times Square. So we have multiple studios. CNBC broadcasts live twice a day out of our studios. It is an investment for us, and not everybody has a market site. I get that. But we do a lot of improvising. We have pop-up studios at various offices. We've developed our own backdrops that, you know, are not cost prohibitive. And we have some very, you know, basic sets. These are not, I would not say this is, you know, CNBC type quality from a set standpoint. If you were to come to the market site, you'd see a vastly different set. But it works for us. It works extremely well. And when you're thinking about Facebook Live, it helps in both a branding perspective as well as what the audience sees. So I know when people think of NASDAQ and all the things we're doing with our studios, they think, oh my gosh, that's a huge investment. You know, what are we going to do? Yes, for us and what we do with all the television networks and the other outside networks that come in, it is an investment. But, you know, we also do a lot of the pop-up sets that really is convenient and efficient and affordable. In terms of inspiration, we get inspiration from a lot of different areas, and I will say the key thing for us is experimentation. We experiment with a lot of things. I'm constantly meeting with Anna and the social team and looking at various ways that we can develop either new types of content or shoot different ways. And our view is it is a learning experience and a learning process. You have to try different things to see what works. And to that point, you also have to stop doing things that don't work. That's also is part of the process and what we've learned. So we do a number of different things around the city, around clients, and it is an experiment for us, and we love that. It makes it fun. It allows us to learn on what we can do to improve other shows. It's helped us evolve into other pieces of content as well with what we're doing, for instance, now on Twitter Live. So we used to have a trade talk show that was only on Facebook Live. We experimented with it, took the ideas that we learned from doing on Facebook Live, and pushed it over into Twitter. And it's a much more dynamic 1 to 2 minute show type format that works very well on Twitter Live. Our audience on Facebook was not engaging on that as much as they do on Twitter. It's a totally different dynamic. We launched earlier last month our first Facebook Watch show, Cultural Capital. A lot of the ideas that we're using for Cultural Capital, it's a half-hour show where we go into companies and we learn about their culture, how they developed it, what the culture's like. A lot of those ideas have come from some of the experimentation that we've done around our Facebook Live events, and it's worked extremely well for us. So I would say don't be afraid to experiment. I have been doing social for about 10 years now, and I always get this question about when's the best time to post. You know, there has to be a silver bullet. You could Google when is the best time to post for social media and get 1,000 different answers. You have to learn on your own when is the best time to post. So there are some obvious times for us, right? We have an opening bell ceremony every day at 9:30. We have a closing bell ceremony every day at the end of the day. Of course, we're going to post during those times. We get a lot of views for those ceremonies. There's various companies, celebrities that come in. Those are obvious. Trade Talks, as I mentioned before, was another one where we had to learn over time through experimentation where was the best time to engage. It used to be a long 15, 20-minute show. We've shortened it down to 2 minutes. We've moved it over to Twitter. It works very well for us. Facebook Live, again, you know, certain shows will go on at certain times, but we're experimenting. We're using the platform to find out when the best time is for audiences. We have a global audience, so we do have to think outside of the 9 to 5 Eastern time zone window as well. And from that, you know, again, we learn. We move shows around to different times. We take in the data and the content. But if you're looking for a silver bullet in terms of when is timing, you're going to have to find it yourself, because every company, every brand really is extremely different. And the content platforms are extremely different as well. I love this graphic and this data actually from the agency 360i. This is one thing that we do actually use when it comes to developing content, because it is all about what platform works well and by what audience. You know, for instance, you can see if you want global reach and you want to reach millennials, Instagram is actually a really great platform for reaching millennials. If you want to look at mobile, you know, Pinterest, look at the activity for Pinterest. So this is something that has helped shape our content strategy. You can go to their website and pull this down, but it's a really fantastic way to think about content and what platforms are used by audience. Not, again, this is not time of when to post, but who you're trying to reach. And, you know, this will continue, obviously, to be updated on a regular basis, but as of right now, this is kind of a structure for us and a template for us that we're using in terms of who we want to reach. It's an audience engagement number. In terms of some of the things that we're doing with Facebook Live, and as we look at Twitter. I don't want to focus so much on Twitter as we're talking about Facebook, but when we look at how it integrates with not only our brand, but some of the things that we're trying to show and engage with our users, this is kind of where we are. We obviously, the influencers component, exclusive locations do very well. If you can have an exclusive arrangement with someone, a book author, for instance, is a great example for us. And then in terms of how we're looking at content, I've mentioned already our trade talks went to Twitter because it's less than 2 minutes. It's a very quick overview of what's happening in the markets, and that's the platform for us. But most of our shows on Facebook are quite long. So you're looking at like 10 minutes or longer. Again, our Facebook watch show is 30 minutes. So there is certainly a deeper level engagement on Facebook Live, and we've learned that, and that's how we do that. We do use a lot of imagery as well on Facebook, obviously from a live standpoint. So the backdrop, the studio is important for us. We try to make some of the shows are much more fun and engaging where there's actually people have props. Again, it depends on the content, who you're trying to reach, and what you're trying to do. We have a semi-regular every Friday social media show. It's called Social Media Geek Out on Fridays, where we have a lot of props and we have a lot of social media people come in, and they're talking about social strategies, what works, engagement. That's a good example of how we're trying to draw in a certain audience. You know, when you think of NASDAQ, you know, why are we trying to reach social media people? You know, there are a number of reasons for that in terms of our listed companies have social media staff that they're trying to use and leverage our content. We're trying to learn from other people as well. So that is another example from an engagement standpoint and a show what we're trying to do. And then in terms of content, I do think the other thing, we do put a lot of Facebook Live content post-show onto our blog, our Market Insight blog. So this whole idea of social to social, using other platforms to distribute it, also for us, you know, as we look to drive engagement, is important for us. So if you were to go to our blog, you would see that we're driving people to Facebook from our blog. We do the same thing from Twitter. Again, I think that's, for you guys, that's a pretty obvious thing that you are probably doing and should be doing. But as we look to drive people to those longer shows, new shows, or as we revitalize shows, that's another thing that we're doing. So we certainly want to take advantage of all of our programming. And again, same thing. I don't think this is rocket science for anybody here in this room. But in terms of the cross-platform, cross-distribution of content, this is also, again, something that we work to do to get content out to other platforms, YouTube being the example. One thing we've learned, obviously, because of Instagram, is having a lot of fun with Instagram stories. This is something I would say within the last couple of months, we have really taken a deeper dive into the Instagram stories. It's a great way for us to have snippets of content that drive people to Facebook Live for the longer piece. So I view this almost as it's the commercial for the show, which is where Instagram stories has helped us. And we do that around bell ceremonies. We do that around one-on-one interviews. But it's been an extremely important added element to what we're trying to do with Facebook Live and promote to, you know, a similar audience, but also a much broader millennial audience per that graphic that I showed earlier. And it does help us drive a lot of content to the Facebook page. And then in terms of measuring, my view on measurement goes back to the same comment I made about timing and when is the best time to post. All of your metrics really depend on what you're trying to accomplish. I don't have a golden rule or a golden standard for metrics and measurement. Your business is probably different than my business. Your business executives are probably looking for a different thing than my business executives. Your marketing team is doing different things than mine. We do look at, I would say, obviously some of the obvious things like viewership, like what are the numbers? Are people engaged? The numbers of people watching is important, but what are they doing with the content? If we're not getting any engagement and it's just kind of dead eyes, how do we change that? How do we get people to better engage with the show. Maybe we add some certain elements around Instagram stories, or we use Twitter a little bit more. But again, I would go back to that whole idea of experimenting and trying to figure out the best ways to get people there. Obviously, Facebook Live is great because you do get live engagement and through all the emoji hits as well as the commentary, and you can see all of that. So you do get a fairly quick analysis of what's happening with the content and what you need to do with it and change it. I would go back to the comment I made earlier about the panels. If you go to Facebook Live, it is a lot of talk show type discussions, but that, through experimentation and learning, works really well for us. And that was obviously through some of the engagement that we had, and which drove it. And then the other thing is, you know, just the difference between Twitter. You know, Twitter obviously is very different to measure from a video perspective, right? If you use Periscope, you can't really get the same metrics and numbers. You can only get some of the data if you upload the video directly to Twitter. That's one of the things that we're working around and figure out how we do that. We do use Periscope for our Trader Talk, so that's how we know that. But Twitter is definitely certainly sort of that now, that real-time right now, what's happening engagement, where, again, we look at Facebook, and Facebook Live for us is more of the talk show theme, longer content that's going to stay online for a longer time. I'm happy to answer questions about what we're doing. I know we're very different than a lot of other companies, but certainly would love to share some of the things that we've learned and questions.
Yeah, and if it's okay, raising the hands, great. I'm going to walk around with the mic because we're recording the audio. So thank you.
Hi, this is Lee Pavak, and I'm with a Blue Cross organization. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I think there's a lot of parallels with financial services, because we are one, really.
Yep.
And the Facebook Live, I'm interested more about your partnerships with other influencers. And you mentioned Cisco, but what about financial planners, like making this available to them to push out to their customer base?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we've worked with the CFA Institute, which is one of the major institutes that certifies financial services people. And in terms of content, they have their own social strategy as well. I know that very much because I know the people over there. Melissa is great. So we do try to do that, but within our theme, it is not as much a, when I talked about educational aspect, it's not as much as a how do you pass your Series 7 exam, right? Versus where we're trying to get people to think about us as a different and unique, innovative financial technology company. So that obviously translates into the type of people that we want to bring into the show.
Okay. Got a question from Amanda here.
Yeah.
Hi, Amanda with the City of Miami Beach. So it's actually interesting you talked about the panel discussion, because I'm trying to start developing that with the city. But I was curious, when you guys first started doing these panel discussion Facebook Lives, our idea right now was to kind of get questions from our residents and our visitors. Did you kind of, how long of a period promoting-wise did you do in the beginning? Because obviously now people kind of expect it, but do you give yourself a week, 2 weeks, or do you take questions ahead of time? Kind of how do you do that?
Yeah, I will start internally. I mean, the internal planning process is weeks in advance, obviously. And then you also have to have backups because people cancel and so on and so forth. But it's typically, we will start promoting, you know, I would say within a week, and then shorter time frame as well, so multiple times. But, you know, 2 weeks out, 3 weeks out is, I mean, that's really a long time in internet time, right? So the bulk of our shows will be, you know, if we have a show on Monday, for instance, we're going to be promoting it Friday and through the weekend, and then heavily on Monday morning. And then shows later on in the week, you're going to get a 1 or 2 day promotion ahead of time. The longer shows like Facebook Watch that we're doing right now, you know, we're doing a show a week. So, you know, those get a bit of a long lead time in terms of promoting because it's a half hour show and it really is a show. We hired a host. There's no NASDAQ people in it. We put a lot of production effort behind it. So they're getting more sponsored content from us as well. So you're going to see that content, you know, promoted constantly and repetitively, as well as back shows because they are archived. So, but the shows that are happening during the week, yeah, we're going to give a couple day boost.
Okay, I've got a question over here from David.
Yeah.
Hi. Yes, I'm David. I'm with the IMF. Could you talk a little bit more about post-marketing and distribution? You mentioned it before, so I mean, I don't know if you just have an example of, you know, a show. What do you do with it afterwards? You know, do you like cut small clips and then just push them out throughout the week? Maybe use them for other platforms or.
Yeah, the thing we've used well for us is our blog, because we can put the video and post the video directly into our blog afterward, and then we can promote the blog post via all of our social networks, LinkedIn, Twitter, you know, Pinterest, Instagram, doesn't matter. So you can get that truly network distribution effect. As I mentioned before, some posts get sponsored. You know, if we have, you know, someone that we really want to help to, you know, push and promote for us, we'll put a little bit of sponsorship money behind it. So you'll see Facebook Live or Facebook content from NASDAQ sponsored. But the blog for us really becomes a platform where we can drop in that video. We can archive it on YouTube as well, as I mentioned. And YouTube, you know, look, it is a great destination for video content. And we definitely use that. So I would say for us, if it's native, unsponsored, it's, well, if it's native, it's on Facebook, but if it's unsponsored content, it's YouTube and the blog.
All right, and then from the back here, just a reminder, we have about 10 minutes, so there's plenty of time for questions, so if you think of some, just keep raising your hand and I'll come over to you. Next up is Ash here.
Yep. Hi there, yep. My name is Ash. So I work with a consulting firm, and we work with a lot of regulated brands, so we'll work with, like, financial services brands, and so we'll do a lot of the back end, just like, you know, content, workflow, all of that on the back end, but part of our job is also to just push them a little bit further.
Yep.
And so, as you know,
that's fun.
It's a lot of fun, just a lot of back end. And so organization is a big thing, but also saying, hey, your competitors are, for example, doing Facebook Live. But we've definitely had a lot of pushback, especially because their compliance, for example, will say, this just does not, you know, or a larger marketing group will say, this just doesn't align with our marketing,
yeah,
or whatnot. So we've definitely gotten into places where we've you know, shown case studies, we've shown competitors, et cetera. Do you have any tips, additional tips, because we need to sort of sell this to, like, larger marketing guys, but also up to the, you know, CMO and possibly CEO. Do you have any good business cases that you can share that really helped say, hey, we're doing it because of this, and this is how it's helped, quote unquote, the business in a larger sense?
Yeah, I mean, being in a highly regulated industry has a lot of hurdles. I think within financial services, as you know, there already are rules of the road that are out there. FINRA, the SEC, they've all come out with social media guidelines, which certainly helps make it not sort of the wild, wild west. I can tell you from my own experience, the best way to get through it is make friends with legal and risk and compliance. Take them for coffee, take them to lunch, you know, really get to know them, because they can be a blockade for it. The other factor is, you know, the C-suite, you know, CEO, CIO. If they have buy-in and want to do it, that is certainly going to help, you know, push, you know, so pushing down and pushing up from both sides. Because as marketers and communicators, we all know this stuff works. We all know it's great. It's good for engagement. There's metrics. But if your roadblocks are in the C-suite and in risk, you really are handcuffed, and it's going to be very difficult. So in all the organizations I've worked in, having buy-in from legal and making sure that they are part of the process, we have a social media council. Legal is very much involved with that. We make them feel like they are helping drive it, because the fact is they are. So I would say make friends with them as much as you can. We have set our own set of guidelines from social media that legal approves. Legal understands, you know, when we do have a question, we go to them. If there's a certain comment on there, do we reply, do we not reply, how do we handle it? You know, they are definitely feel like they are included in it. So getting it off the ground is, again, experimentation, you know, small steps, very easy steps. You know, interviewing a book author is, you know, not exactly delving into trading strategies and what to buy and what not to buy. Those are very different topics. So leveraging content, bless you, that I think that works well, that is not in that SEC FINRA box, I think certainly helps. But I would say, you know, get to know the compliance people as best as you can, and make sure they understand what you're trying to accomplish and do. And, you know, have a sit down. It helps.
Yeah, bring legal over to your house for dinner. That would be an interesting story.
That's a little too far.
So we have a couple more questions. One in the back, and then I'll come over to you. So the next one is, sorry, I was cheating with looking at names. Carly, next question.
Hi. Do you use a system that helps you produce and moderate the content? And if not, how do you moderate the comments?
Yeah, the moderation is simple, right? I mean, we have someone that's always watching it and watching the feed as content goes out. You know, we use Spreadfast as our main platform for distributing and pushing content out. You know, obviously we don't use that for Facebook Live. We have a whole monitoring team, monitoring alerts. Items get pushed to everybody on my team and the media relations side as well as the social media side. I mean, we put a lot of effort behind it. But in terms of the Facebook Live, yeah, I mean, there is, as we're broadcasting, there is someone right there watching the feed and monitoring it.
I have a follow-up question.
Yeah.
So are people deleting comments that are maybe inappropriate?
We typically, our policy is don't delete anything.
Okay.
So let it ride. That doesn't mean you have to respond to everything.
Yeah, and as I get to the next question, maybe talk about why, because I think that's important. Some people kind of automatically think delete it if it's inappropriate.
Yeah, I mean, there's you can hide comments as well. So if there are comments that are inappropriate, depending on how you define inappropriate by your social media guidelines that your legal team, after your lunch with them, has signed off on, you know, you can hide comments, you can delete them. But for us, it's all about, you know, we're a marketplace that's built on transparency. And so if things are out there and you're putting your name behind it and you're associating your comment with it, you know, it's out there. It doesn't mean we have to respond to it. You know, if there are certain things that are obviously questioning what we're doing as a company, we definitely are, you know, we're on that and we're replying to it. But if it's things that are just so off topic, we can either decide to hide it as a team, consult with legal, in very rare instances, we could delete it if it's really, really off topic and really, really derogatory and doesn't belong there. But for us, again, built on transparency, we want to be transparent. That's a good question. So deleting it, I would say would be really inflammatory, kind of threatening. That would obviously deserve something that would be deleted, or you could just decide to hide it so no one else sees it. Obviously, when you delete a comment, you know, the person knows you're deleting it. So again, I think it's a case-by-case basis. I don't think there's a set in stone what you want to do. If someone is continually aggravating and putting things on there that don't belong, you can block, right? I mean, there are things, steps you have to take, right? So I think it is a case-by-case basis.
Okay, we're back in the back here with Craig.
Hi, wondering if you could comment on how you think about some of the metrics that Facebook exposes, such as impressions, views, engagement. How do you prioritize sort of how to interpret those metrics? And then also mm-hmm. things like frequency, and how do all those things go into sort of managing or maybe gaming the Facebook algorithm, right? So that you can have the maximum organic reach you can have.
Yeah, man, that's an awesome question because it's a hard one. Impressions alone, I think, as we all know, it's a number, and it is what it is. You have to compare it, I think, and benchmark it to other pieces of content that are out there. It's just, it's not, the number alone means very little. In terms of engagements and what we're getting from Facebook to determine if something is being liked or not liked, that certainly helps drive, is this the right time for the show? Is it the right time allotment? Because you can obviously see when people drop off. If you have a 20-minute show and no one watches it after 3 minutes, okay, well, it doesn't mean, probably shouldn't be a 20-minute show. So some of this, again, I keep going back to experimentation and learning is part of that process. And I think, you know, if there's content out there that you really want people to see, yes, the sponsored content and pushing it with some paid, it does help, but from my experience, you know, that doesn't necessarily give you quality. It gives you quantity. But if you're looking for more eyeballs to attract, to maybe bring in, you're going to have to, again, experiment. A little bit of paid content and then stop the paid content. What happens? Do the numbers really fall off? Are they steady? How far do they fall off? You have to learn as you go. Does that help?
Okay, so we have time for one more question here with Amanda. And then I know you said you'd be able to stick around for just a mm-hmm. few minutes afterwards, so you're going to be able to talk to him individually if you yep. want. But here's Amanda.
sorry to ask a question. Okay. For the pop-up ones, what kind of equipment did you use? Because obviously it needs to be something that's easy to move around. So what kind of equipment do you recommend for someone starting off trying to do these pop-up Facebook Lives?
Yeah, I am not the production crew. So if you can't tell by my tie. That is a great question for Anna, to be honest. I know when we first started, it was very, very nice, like, you know, iPhone, iPad, and, you know, putting it on a tripod. And that still works. So
yeah,
if you, right? Yeah.
And obviously, you guys have a little more budget than I do. But
yeah.
I was curious if there was anything that you recommend for anyone just kind of, obviously, the iPhone's great. But
I'm happy to put you in touch with Anna if you want to give me your card after, and she can talk you through all the things that we've done and what we've learned. But yeah, you know, there's lighting kits, and there's we have invested some money into it, yes.
All right, so that's all the time we have. So let's hear it for Alan. Thank you so much.
Appreciate
great job.
It.